To the Authentic Life with KL, the podcast where we throw out the rule book, where we dive in head first to the real and raw, unapologetic journey of living the best life. That includes lots of music. This is your go-to space for empowerment, for deep healing and owning your authenticity like the boss that you are. We're here to break down walls and slay self-doubt. Vibe to the soundtrack of your soul. With every beat and lyric, we'll move through stories that heal and empower. You can live your fullest and most badass life. Welcome to The Authentic Life with KL. Today I have with me Hashima Moja. He believes in the transformative power of art, viewing his role as a composer as a conduit for change and enlightenment.
To allow us to get to know you a little bit more, I pretty standardly ask the question of what is something about you that's maybe people wouldn't know.
Yeah, so something about me people might not know is that I spend a lot of my time engaged in really nerdy activities. I'm a bibliophile. I'm usually reading about three books at a time, and it can range from history to music to physics to linguistics. I'm curious about just about everything.
It's knowledge.
So you know, that really informs a lot of what I do.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that, especially after listening to some of the music and things like that. You definitely have to, I think, have that inquisitive side to look a little deeper on things. And I think reading, I was never a fan of it, you know, when I was younger, but now I am such a fan because I love to learn and just like absorb everything. So,
well, books are an amazing thing.
They are. Have you always wanted to be a musician? Is this something you always wanted to do?
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't say I always wanted to be a musician. Mm-hmm. I would say that I was always curious. So when I was a little boy, I would spend lots and lots and lots of time with my grandparents, my maternal grandparents. And I spent a lot of that time that I was spending with them kind of laying in their backyard, looking up at the clouds, trying to figure things out.
Right.
You know, because we hear all these childhood stories, like there's, I don't know, angels dancing around up there on tops of the clouds, mm-hmm. whatever it was. And whatever my grandmother and grandfather were telling me, I was laying there on the back, in the backyard, trying to figure this out. Like, well, how do I get up there?
Yeah. Right.
So I think that from a very young age, I established that I was on a quest. Mm-hmm. In five-year-old terms, I wouldn't have put it that way. I think that when music came into my life, I recognized pretty quickly mm-hmm. that it could be a tool for me to go on that quest.
Love that.
Yeah. Love
that. I remember when I was little, I had the neighbors that I would always play with, and her parents would always tell us when it was thunder that the angels were bowling.
Yeah, my grandmother would say that. My grandmother would say that too.
Yeah, angels are up there bowling, making noise, making strikes. So,
right.
What are some of your musical influences for the music and all the just everything that you do? What are some of your influences?
Wow. So that's a great question. Musically, again, kind of like my reading habits, I'm curious and I love so many different things. So I think a funny thing for people who know me now wouldn't know that my first foray into the bass was because my mother had this record by Paul McCartney, not by the Beatles, but by Paul McCartney. And I heard this bass line. It was a song called Band on the Run.
Mm-hmm.
And the title intrigued me, but so that was the first foray. And then I kind of jumped from Paul McCartney to Kiss.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a pretty wide jump. But then as I started, you know, studying music, I around 13 or 14, I would say that I started to really, really dive deeply into jazz because I had teachers who were turning me on to Duke Ellington, to Charles Mingus and Miles Davis, and later, my first jazz record my mother bought me for my birthday when I was 16. She said, "What do you want?" I said, "I want a CD player and I want jazz records." And she went to the store and said, "My son wants jazz CDs. I don't know anything about jazz." And the guy said, "Well, I think these guys are good." And so she came home with John Coltrane, A Love Supreme, and Miles Davis, Kind of Blue. So those were my first two jazz records that I own. And I always tell the story that I heard the Miles Davis, and accessible.
Yes.
And then I put the John Coltrane on. It was about 9 o'clock at night on my birthday. I put the headphones on, big headphones like what you have on, right? And I heard those first notes and I said, "What? What in the world is this?" They said this guy was good. I don't know what he's doing. He was just honking and squealing, and it's kind of avant-garde, right? Took me a long time to be able to comprehend that. But I think that that record started to stretch my awareness, my consciousness. And then, then getting into cultural influences like Cuban rumba and Puerto Rican bomba. And my godmother was from Ghana, West Africa. So I was always hearing records from the African continent. So I had all these influences. And then I'm a hip hop baby. So, growing up with hip hop, growing up with Public Enemy and Rakim and,
So you just had
Grand
a
Nubian.
recipe for all kinds of stuff in your blood.
Yeah. Well, we would say I had a sancocho. In Spanish, we'd say I had a sancocho. I had a stew. I had a whole bunch of different ingredients that went into the mix.
That's
And that's just the
amazing.
musical influences,
How fun. How fun. So I started the podcast, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this because I feel like whenever I read into some of your, say, quotes and different things like that on your website, and I was like, oh, he gets it. He just puts it so much prettier than I do. I'm not a writer by any means, but I tend to do things very intuitively, and connection is such a huge thing. And music has been
What?
some of those saving graces for me. Like, you connect and you're like, why do I connect? Oh, could it be that
Right.
they had that experience? Or you just connect, whether it be from instruments to lyrics. And I'm a lyric person, but I
Sure.
read some things from you. So do you mind if
Oh, please.
I
Please.
read
If
it?
it's on my website, then I don't have to worry too
It is,
much.
it is, it is. I pulled it and I went through a lot of different things, because as I was going through and kind of like taking everything that you do in, and then I ran across this and I was like, oh, that's everything that I believe to be true, because I do believe that music is this foundational language that so many times it's missed on how important that it is. And
Absolutely.
so you said music is the architecture of the soul, and every performance, a sonic ritual, is an invitation to build sacred space within and between us, spaces where we can collectively heal, uplift, and inspire. It's in these resonant spaces that we truly connect and remember what it's like to be human. And I was like, oh, he gets it.
Well, that's the, you know, that's the that's the focus for me, right? I always say this, Kitty. Before we had a music industry, before that existed as a formal thing, as a business, people from all around the world, regardless of where they come from, have some indigenous practice relating to music, whether it was sitting around a fire and singing songs, whether it's dancing to celebrate death or life, whether it's to celebrate the entrance into a new season astrologically, whatever it is, every culture has some way of expressing through music what they're experiencing in the world around them. And so for me, the return to this idea of sonic ritual, which is a term that I kind of coined or thought about when I was thinking about my mission. What is my mission? And I think as we get older, as we pass from stage to stage,
We're
And
like,
you
oh
behaved very differently.
no.
Yeah. Yikes. But I started out just like anyone else. I wanted to be a star. I wanted everybody to know my name, because in Buddhism, there's a concept which is that we all live fighting against the fear of death. And death not necessarily being just the physical death, but will people remember us? And whether you're looking at hieroglyphs or cave paintings or Basquiat or Pascal or Beethoven or Coltrane, everybody has created something that says to the world, I was here. I mattered. I had a voice. And sonic ritual is the idea that we bring everybody into a space. We create a space, and then we hold sonic ritual in the space so that those who are used to feeling invisible can feel seen. Those who are used to feeling silenced can feel heard. The idea, particularly in a really toxic, hyper individualistic capitalist society. I know I just launched into a whole other area of conversation, but in a capitalist society, individualism, we negate our basic human truth, which is connection and interconnection. And sonic ritual reminds us of that all over again. So my concerts, my recordings, my conversations, my writings are all rituals. Everything is a ritual to return us back to our core identity. And the understanding, or operating from the place of understanding, that my life can't be okay if Kitty's life is not okay, even if I don't know Kitty, right? But because on a binary level, A is connected to B, and A is also connected to C because it's connected to B, we're all interconnected. And so what's happening in other parts of the world right now affects me. What's happening in Gaza, what's happening in Somalia or Sudan, what's happening in Ukraine, what's happening in, it doesn't matter where it is, if people are suffering, can't be okay unless I'm just completely oblivious to the fact that I am connected, right, to these individuals. And that's what sonic ritual is for me. So I live my life as a sonic architect. I'm always trying to build those new spaces.
That's amazing. That's something that's so needed. I teach a group online called Blend Your Spirit, and I kind of have different social media presences and stuff. And Blend Your Spirit, the whole reason why I do it is it's called Blend Your Spirit because we're a blend. Like we are so interblended people. I think nowadays there's so much focus, and people don't realize that there's so much focus on separating us, right? That's I think the missing point. And nobody thinks that we're all being separated, but in fact, we are all being separated. And I think holding space for people to tell their stories and their truth, one, I think it allows so you coming on here, someone else could hear this and be like, oh, yes, that he did it, so I can do it. So I think it gives people a little bit
Absolutely.
of a gumption and freedom to be able to take up space and hopefully push some of the ick out. And then I think that when people feel heard, it opens up the door for healing, but you have to take up space.
Absolutely.
You have to take up space to tell your story to get heard.
The foundational ideas of healing have to do with entering into the dark womb. And if the dark wound is related to you being silenced your whole life, and I in my non-performance work, my healing work, whether it's sound healing or leading meditation, I just personally tend to find that I'm working with more women identified bodies than male identified bodies at this juncture, right? Could change. And so one of those very typical wounds for women is being silenced, right? Being silenced, being marginalized. And so So when we enter into that work of trying to identify what the dark wound is, or there are several usually, but as we enter into that, we have to go all the way back into the space where the wound occurred.
Yeah.
Right? So we have to face what it's like. All so, you know, and what triggers me, for instance, I'll share right in a vulnerable
Sure.
moment, because I think it's important that practitioners do that.
I do too.
As a bicultural person, right? As a person who identifies as Italian and Puerto Rican, living life always on the margins. Not fitting in one or more spaces and finding, trying to navigate, what's it like?
Right.
And so when someone might say to me, oh yeah, you know, you're not really this,
yeah,
or you're not really that, that can easily be triggered in me all over again. But we have to be triggered in order, the trigger opens up the gateway for us to go in to the where the dark wound is, right?
Yeah.
So these people who are triggering us are actually teachers.
Yeah.
Now, the danger in the divisive way that you're discussing, for me anyway, is that we live in cancel culture. We live in culture of, well, I don't have to listen to you if you say things that don't make me happy, make me feel comfortable.
Right.
Well, from a spiritual standpoint, everybody is a teacher because we're all interconnected.
Yeah.
They don't know they're teaching us all the time, but they come and they trigger us. And that might be a friend, a stranger, a colleague, and more than likely, it's going to be your partner.
Yeah. Yeah.
And your partner is going to trigger you to have to open up, because when that door opens, then you get propelled down into the depths of that dark wound so that you can actually see it, acknowledge it, and heal it. Now, music happens to be one of the ways that I help people open up that door, because we have become, Kitty, we have become experts at building walls.
Oh, absolutely.
Protecting ourselves. But the problem is, as it's been said in many ways and by many people, those walls eventually become our own prison.
Yeah, they do.
We become imprisoned there. And then we say, why don't people see me? They can't see you because you built a wall there.
Yeah.
But I built a wall there because people hurt me.
Yeah.
But then you can't complain that people don't see you.
Yeah.
So then we have to be courageous. And music can also help us be courageous. We find that song, we find that lyric, we find that piece of music that gives us that, that lift that we need to start to face the day, right? And so music, aside from its value as entertainment, most music is used as distraction.
Yeah,
but music as a tool is really powerful, because it opens us up in ways maybe that conversations can't, because we're dealing with frequency.
Yeah.
And we're dealing with the power of frequency. We're dealing with vibration. And that those sympathetic vibrations, that attunement theory, those stronger vibrations that might be coming from music that is intentional in its purpose of opening us up, can now open us up to the point where we can at least start to release, right?
Yeah.
And most of us need a release before we can even dive into the dark wound. You have to have a cathartic moment first.
I think so too. We talked a little bit about, we talk a lot about healing, and I call it shadow work, and you know, those kind of things.
Yep.
And I connect with you saying, like, everybody is your teacher, because I will often say that triggers are open doors to a classroom, and you're the subject, and you can go in or you can shut the door, but you'll be coming back.
That.
You'll be coming back. It will
I love
make
that.
You come back.
You will be coming back.
And it's not going to be on better terms
I love
either.
That.
So it's
that's it, right. No, it'll probably be a little more difficult the second time around or the third time
right?
around.
It is. And I think that it's so interesting too, the whole vulnerability thing. That's something that I've worked on myself, and I continue to work on as being a teacher, a mentor, a friend, whatever you want to call us, a healer, a spiritual person that's just here to help the world. And I think that that being vulnerable is one of the strongest things, or something I feel like is one of the strongest humans to be able to be vulnerable, because we all know what happens when you're vulnerable, right? We all know from our wounds, it can happen. You're gonna get hurt. You're gonna get seen. Someone may not like you. There might be all these different things, but there's
Sure.
also so much good that comes from it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
you know, it's interesting because as a male identified person, right? I often think about, or I think more these days, about why maybe men are not coming to those spaces, right? For healing in the same numbers, the same percentages that women tend to flock to those spaces, whether they're discursive spaces or physical spaces. And I think that one of the things that our society does is it really creates this disservice to the divine masculine,
Oh,
right? We
absolutely.
talk, we should continue to support and talk about healing the divine feminine and healing women, because patriarchy has done a number on women for millennia, right?
Right.
And without getting into a history lesson, you know, it's been millennia, right?
Yeah.
Thousands of years of oppression of women, of the female body, of the female consciousness and awareness, of the energy of the divine feminine. But when we start to think about equity, or we think about healing through the lens of equity and balance, if we create all of this work around healing the divine feminine, which is necessary and important, but we don't do the same amount of work for the divine masculine, then what we create is just another imbalance in our society. So the pendulum goes from here here, right? And so men, we are taught in some of those, you know, really restrictive gender roles that we're all raised with. That to be a man is to be strong, and to be strong is to be invulnerable, to take the hit, to put up with it, to tolerate it, to be tough, right? So we have terms like man up, right? And man up usually means you're hurting, but so what?
Yeah, shut your mouth.
Shut your mouth, tolerate it. Now, aside from, without getting into the physiological effects of what that does to a person, right? Over a long period of time, emotionally, it doesn't only inhibit the healing process, but it also stops us as men from being the balance to the divine feminine, because we're not really being strong. Strength requires vulnerability, requires the courage to say to our friends, our colleagues, our spiritual leaders or guides, our partners, I'm hurting and I'm backed into a corner. I can't hide anymore. So James Baldwin, who I know, since you read my website, you'll see a lot of references to Baldwin. James Baldwin says, love removes the masks that we think we can't live without. It forces us. Love really does that. So whether we're receiving love from others or whether it's self-love, that moment of truth where we have to say, I am hurting. I can't keep carrying the load anymore. My body is feeling it. My mind, my soul is tired, you know? And so the divine masculine, which interestingly enough, we forget, right? You have divine masculine. You also have divine feminine. I have divine masculine.
I love
I
this.
have divine feminine. We are yin yang
Yeah.
beings.
I just had this
Not yin.
conversation with my friend last night, so I love it.
Right. Not yin and yang, because in as a Taoist, as a Chan Buddhist, which incorporates Taoism and Buddhism, in Taoism, the concept is often misconstrued as yin and yang, two separate things that come together, but it's yin yang, which are interdependent, they're interconnected. I cannot express my divine masculine without also expressing my divine feminine. But men, in a Western linear way of thinking, are taught we express our masculine. We're warriors. Women are supposed to be soft. But women in that, I think about my grandmother. My grandmother was a tough lady.
Right.
She was soft. She was very
Right.
soft and very loving. But when she had to be firm, that part of her rose up. And we're always doing this balancing act of which energy are we choosing to lean in with?
Yeah.
But if we're not allowing ourselves to acknowledge those other parts of ourselves, we're only leaning in a very monolithic way, which is doing a disservice to us. And we're also robbing all the people in our life. And maybe if we think more abstractly, we're robbing the world of all of the fullness and the beauty of
Yeah.
who we are. It's so needed. And you know, when we see what we are dismissing as mental health issues in our society, quite often are simply imbalances in our personalities. There's some blockages. The energy's not flowing properly, and so it's manifesting as these occurrences of mental illness, right? When I first started going to Africa, in Guinea, I was taught that when people experience mental illness, the people in the Susu ethnic group in Guinea, the forest region, they believe that a mental illness is a misalignment between the spirit and the body. So they're separated. So it's almost like the spirit is walking outside of the body. It's a disassociation. I guess in
Yeah.
psychology, you would call it dissociative disorder, right? There's an absolute disconnection from the body. So a musical healer with a knowledge of the tones of the drum or the tones of the voice would play the appropriate tones to realign the body with the spirit, to bring them back into alignment, which is much of the work that sound healers might do. Good sound healers, and I'm going to make a statement about sound healers in a second, but that might be a little controversial, but I have to say it because it's troubling to me. But what I will say is that this idea of alignment is really important, because if we are not thinking about our lives from a holistic standpoint, then we have no way of really, really even beginning to address these problems that we're experiencing, these emotional problems. If we're not thinking about our lives from a holistic perspective, the
Right.
fact that what we eat affects our spirit, what we intake, what we ingest sonically, visually affects our well-being, how we interact with other people, how we are treated by other people at particular stages of our lives and in particular relationships, affects the way that we deal with other people and other relationships. So in the Western medical system is just now catching up with these ideas that we have to look at the whole person to really begin to get at the root causes of what
Right.
we're dealing with. And so now Western medical practitioners are partnering with, and I love that, they're
Finally.
partnering with,
Finally.
you know, well, on a certain level,
Yeah.
the more progressive ones, not everybody, and not as policy, right? Because if we look at
Right.
it from a policy perspective, there are still very strict policies about how modalities can be employed. The fact that they call what I do alternative medicine, or what someone else did, alternative, I'm like, no, this is original medicine. Right? What you do is alternative medicine. Mine is older than yours, right?
It's true.
But the fact that, yes, at least those who are willing to take a risk are starting to partner. They're starting to explore. They're becoming curious,
Yeah.
right? Western medicine is not bad. It's just that there is a particular language that Western medicine uses, and the language of other healing modalities is not the same, so it doesn't align. But what I wanted to say about sound healers, Kitty, is that while I think it's wonderful that more people are leaning into these holistic modalities, the danger of access without proper guidance. See, if you lived in India 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago, you sat with a guru, and the guru said, you want to be a classical singer, or you want to play the sitar? You're going to have to do it my way. You have to follow a system. And I'm going to tell you what your progress is. You're going to have to humble yourself. But in the age of YouTube,
You just Google it or YouTube it.
or in the age of Instagram, where you can go and buy a set of crystal quartz bowls and take a $45 or $25 certification course, everyone thinks they're qualified to call themselves a sound healer. And I literally have had, in the past 3 or 4 months, 6 or 7 people say, I went to this sound healing session in this place or that place, and I had nightmares after, or I had headaches. Well, clearly somebody's doing something wrong, right? So the danger is that there are a lot of quacks. Just like there were people selling snakeskin oil in the 1800s, there are a lot of people saying, I'm going to heal you. I never make a claim that I'm going to heal anybody. I can use the tools that I have to guide you through a process, but the healing is ultimately incumbent upon a couple of things. Your willingness to open up and become vulnerable and honest about what it is you're suffering from. And maybe my role as a facilitator of sonic rituals is nothing more than getting you to the point where you can acknowledge, you can see, it becomes clear. Oh, this is what I'm, my God, this is what I've been dealing with. I've been carrying it all these years. Great. You know what? My job is done. I'm gonna pass you off to a person who's maybe even more qualified than I am to take you to the next level. Because maybe you need a profession, like a mental health profession. Maybe you need a doctor, right? Who can analyze your and diagnose your pathology. But maybe my job is that you come to me with this recognition of what you're dealing with, but you don't know how to approach it. What's the next step? Well, let's think about what the next steps are based upon your capacity to heal. You know, some healing, some he and you know this, right? As a person who does the work that you do, sometimes a person needs scaffolding to heal. They can't just step into the process of healing because the behaviors, the beliefs that are part of their core now, they've literally wrapped themselves around the core of a person. Their whole world is going to come crumbling down.
100%.
And if they are not ready for that, meaning they don't have the support systems in place, familial, friends, professionals, whatever it is that they need, and their life starts come crumbling down, we are responsible for managing that or finding other people who can do a more thorough job than we can. So then we also, that also brings us to this idea that we have to be constantly assessing where we're at as practitioners and practicing that humility to say, I can't handle this case. I don't know what this is. I've never seen this before. And as a person's world comes crumbling down, we have to be skillful enough to put scaffolding in place to hold them in place. But if they're a person, you know, I have a couple of friends who are pretty deep Kundalini practitioners. And when I started going to India, I remember visiting Sadhguru's ashram and Sadhguru giving a talk about why responsible gurus don't teach Kundalini to the average person in society. Because if they're married and have children, they may all of a sudden, as their life comes undone in order to build it, they could lose their family, they could lose their livelihood, they could lose. Those things are really meant for a person who has the space, the bandwidth, the capacity to be able to sit for long periods of time with themselves and experience the absolute life-altering experiences that are going to come. And it's true regardless of modality. So I think that that's really important. And so this is my admonition to everyone who is just cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs to become a sound healer or a yoga teacher. First, understand what your motive is. Because becoming a sound healer or a yoga teacher or a meditation teacher because you're tired of your 9-to-5 job and you want a career change is not a
Please don't do
healthy.
that.
Don't do that. You're harming
Please don't do
people.
that.
You may harm yourself.
Yeah, no, it's true.
You play with energy. You know, Stevie Wonder, I want to keep this tied into music. Stevie Wonder said, when you believe in things you don't understand, then you suffer. You're really just playing with things. The Afro.
I don't know why. Well, I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I would choose to walk into the healing path. Like I have that balance of sometimes, like, I wish I could just go back to being the person that just works 9 to 5 and I'm a robot and I don't know any different. And I think that it'd be perfectly fine. But I also know the life that is outside of that and all the enlightenment and all the amazing things that can happen and the connections
Yeah.
that you wouldn't have. But I do know within the spiritual community, and I know it's all across humanity, but there are people who
Yeah.
are out there to prey on people as well, that they do this just because they want a paycheck, and they will
Sure.
tell you whatever you need to hear to get within
Sure.
your energy. And so protection of your energy, and I think the full understanding that when you do walk into the healing process, your life is going to change. Like
Yeah.
you lose people. They're not on the same frequency. Everybody disappears. You're by yourself. And then you start finding, where you're to go. And there's not a lot of talk about that.
Well, and can I tell you, I ran from this for years.
Yeah.
I ran for dear life. Like every time someone said, Moja, something about you. You should be doing X, Y, and Z. And I said, no, nah, I'm just a musician. I'm just a composer. I just make music. That's what I do. Leave me alone. Don't bother me. Right? I ran from it for years. Until, I mean, I went through maybe a 6 month span of time where every day something was popping up. Somebody was calling me. I was meeting strangers on the side of the road. I'm just walking down the side of the road in New York City and strangers are coming up to me, right? Every time I try to date, attracting a woman who just like just needed hit. And I was like, do I get to be the partner or do I have to be the guru here? Like, and so, until my mentor started to say, well, maybe you just need to pay attention to the signs and stop being so hard-headed. I ran from this. I didn't look for this. And to be quite honest with you, I don't really normally advertise and say, yes, I'm a sound healer and I come up with cool pop culture ways of saying I'm a sonic alchemist. I do this whole mystic personality thing. But the reality, you see, look at even my screen thing back here, but everything is a mystic experience for me. But I ran from it. And I think that when people, in all seriousness, if they feel a legitimate desire and pull to want to help people, understand that this is a process. I've through my life, through my travels as a musician, I wasn't even aware of how my musical life was intersecting with my life of becoming, right? This person that I am now. And that meant sometimes being in some remote area somewhere to play a concert and just having the opportunity to sit with a shaman, or sit with a healer, sit with someone who, quite honestly, ironically enough, in today's world, wouldn't be allowed to help anybody because they don't have any certifications, they don't have any licenses, they don't have anything, right? And sometimes people hide behind licenses and certifications. I know people that list them to me all the time.
And sometimes we hide behind not having them.
We hide behind not having.
Now that you said that, I was like, I feel that sometimes.
Right. But being able to see and experience in different places and within different cultural contexts and frameworks, how people use their gifts to serve. And so eventually, right, it comes to the point where one starts to recognize, oh, my whole life has been pointing me that maybe my purpose here is not to be a famous musician. That may happen, right? But taking less emphasis and putting less energy on that and saying maybe my real purpose is to serve. It's just that music is the vehicle by which I serve, right? And I think that that's kind of how I came to this point. And a couple of years ago started operating from a mission statement. I wrote a mission statement. I said, well, if corporations use mission statements, why shouldn't I?
That's I thought
And so,
about doing that. I think it's important.
I use a mission statement, and I'll be honest with you, Kitty, the mission statement for me is that my mission is to heal, uplift, and inspire billions of people around the world through music and creativity. Therefore, anytime an opportunity comes, I'm holding it up to the mirror of that mission statement. Is this in alignment with what I claim that I want to do? And if it's not, I'm more than happy to pass it on to one of my friends or colleagues who wants that opportunity. And I'm also more than happy to say, no, right now that wouldn't necessarily work for me. So I think that that's really important, is to really create this mission statement, whether one is an artist or a healer, right? Is just what is guiding you? What is your purpose? And that can change too.
Oh, and we have to
But
be
what is
open
your
to that,
purpose?
don't we?
You have to be open to change, right?
Well, I wanted to open up some conversation on your newest release. I have gone I've gone through it myself. I've listened. Not listening, right? I just have it kind of playing in the background sometimes. And then I have listened with the intention of listening, but either way, I feel like your subconscious grasp, whatever you need to hear at that time. But can you talk to me about the healing suite and maybe that journey?
I'm old enough to where I come from an era where people created concept albums, right? Music, we tend to think now about singles, right? So what's the new single? New single, Cardi B's new single, Taylor Swift's new single, so and so's new single. And that's great, right? I love a lot of the music that's constantly coming out. But for me, it was important to make something that was cohesive from the beginning to the end. And so, since you've listened to the album, you know that right off in the beginning, I give this explanation of what the Healing Suite is. And it's really, first of all, it's a journey, right? It's meant, so you're stepping onto to a pathway, you're stepping onto a pathway to take a journey, which really leads you back to yourself. But it's also on a kind of social and political level, the idea of taking the word suite, which is normally associated with Western classical music, and saying, well, all cultures have classical music, right? It may not be something we hear in the symphony, It may not be here something, right? There's, but every culture has something that is of immense value culturally. And so I wanted to lift that point up as I launched musically into creating this. And so drawing on Cuban and Puerto Rican roots and drawing on my experiences growing up, really socialized into the Black American community, right? Playing in churches as a young musician, playing in Baptist churches and Pentecostal churches, and how that influenced not only me, but it really influences the trajectory of American music. And so tying all these influences in and really tying the influences in a way that you and I started off talking about at the beginning, which is this idea of interconnection, that there really is no separation from one thing to the next. One flows into the next and one flows out, and there's it's like a river or like a stream. And so it was about providing people an opportunity to sit and listen to a piece of music, which is not long. It's about 30, I don't know, 38 minutes or something. But I also really wanted to pull in some of my friends who are just brilliant healers. And so asking my friend Yuritsi Govea, who's an amazing dancer, but also somatic awareness practitioner. My friend Tem Blessed, who's an amazing author and rapper, very conscious rapper, but also a meditation teacher who works primarily with kids, right? Works with young people.
Love that.
And also worked for Love Army with Van Jones, right? So this idea of constantly working on racial healing. And so I wanted to get some of those comments. I wanted people to both be entertained, but also to be informed.
I
And
love all
so
the little comments in between. It's not just so for everybody. It's not just a musical journey. Like there are these little moments. Like my favorite is, I think it's, is it the, did I write it down? The Gift After Pain, I think, is that what
the
it's
gift
called?
after the pain. Yeah, the gift after the pain.
Yeah, there's just little blurbs in there that stop in between that give you a moment, of thought between it.
Yeah, Jiu-Jitsu's work focuses a lot on moving beyond or being careful to not become addicted to healing, to get stuck in a healing feedback loop, but to use healing as a way to imagine what is life like after we heal? What do we want? So how what is the gift that we get out of the pain that propels us into a new level of existence? And so musically, I'm drawing on jazz influences, Cuban folkloric influences. I called my really good friend and collaborative partner Iyaba Mandingo, who kind of closes the CD out with a piece called Ubuntu. And Ubuntu, for those who don't know, is the Southern African concept of I am because they are. It's this idea of interconnection, that we cannot exist without acknowledging those who came before us and those who will come after us, and how we fit in that continuum, right? And how we draw on the energy of the past, draw on the energy of the future, because in African cosmologies, there is no disconnect. And the image in, for instance, in Egyptian philosophy is of the phoenix flying back and forth. It can fly back and forth between the past, the present, and the future. There's no separation. So Ubuntu is that idea that there is no separation between those who have already gone on, they've already transitioned, those who have not yet arrived, and us who are in this dimension. And then can we imagine ourselves stepping outside of that reality and beginning in a very quantum way to start to create this new reality, this new perception, this new paradigm, this new body, this new mind. So it's really encouraging us to think about our superhumanity. And so, it took me 2 years to make this record. It's never make taken me 2 years to make a record. As a jazz musician, usually I write the arrangements, we rehearse, and we go in the studio. In 3 days, the album is recorded, and then we put it out into the world. This took me 2 years because I was constantly being challenged in my own growth process, to really look at the wounds I was still carrying.
Yeah.
So when I, you know, there's a piece on the album called "I Easily Release." It sounds kind of like a very gospel-y kind of thing. And the comical part about that piece is that I borrowed a meditation from Deepak Chopra. I easily release that which I no longer need. The past is over. It can no longer harm me. I took that whole meditation and I turned it into a gospel-y type, you know, what you might experience if you go to a Baptist church or a Pentecostal church on a Sunday morning, and the pastor is calling, inviting people to come and release their burdens on the altar. That's the kind of song that that is. So, you know, and then there's the jazz influences, and then there, you know, so there's a lot of different,
Yeah,
there's a lot of
everything's
different.
married. I mean, everything is married. There, I don't, just listening to it, you can pick out so many different things, but it's all married in there really beautifully. And
Yeah.
it's so easy to listen to. Like you
Thank
said,
you so
rather,
much.
yeah, you're welcome. It's rather you're listening with the intent to understand, which if we'll just be quiet sometimes, we don't have to worry about trying to understand or just listening to it, because it's different pieces that I take from it, you know, on each time. And I often will focus on, you know, what comes after pain and your healing, because it just holds us hostage so long. Like once we
It
realize,
really
like, it
does.
really is the forgiveness and the healing, and it's up to us. It just holds us hostage. And once that moves out of place, you're like, whoa, how old am I? I like thought it was this for all my life. And then you're like, and
Yeah.
it was nothing of that. It was literally, I don't know, a 20-minute moment in my childhood that made me feel not want to be seen my whole life. And that's crazy. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, and so, you know, and so it's interesting too, Kitty, is that when we're in this healing process, oftentimes what we don't realize, while we think we're engaged in the work of healing, we're really engaged very secretly in the process of trying to reconcile our own shame. We're in this process of still blaming ourselves for the pain that we had have lived through. So it's this really important notion of being able to say, I'm no longer, because when we're sitting in pain, you know, there's a saying that the there's a saying by Einstein that the solution is almost never found at the level of the problem. We have to move into solution mode, which means that we have to actually step outside of. It's almost like having an out-of-body experience to be able to see objectively.
That's so
See
true.
objectively, because we're still blaming ourselves. We're still in Spanish, what we would call negación. We're in this denial that we deserve more than what pain has taught us we deserve. And we go into self-flagellation. We're constantly beating ourselves. You know, I do a lot of work with women who have unfortunately lived through domestic abuse, breast cancer, and even though those seem like two disparate situations, both of those situations carry this weight of guilt, which is my fault. Why didn't I catch the breast cancer earlier? Why didn't I do this? Did I eat something wrong? What is it? And then with domestic violence, of course, you know, maybe if I just hadn't been so mouthy, maybe if I just hadn't been, maybe if I had done this. And you know, my mother was a domestic violence survivor, so maybe that's why I just end up working with so many women who have dealt with this. But getting a person to be able to step outside of that and say, now I have to look. Now I'm going to observe the pain from outside of it. What is it teaching me? What can I take away from it? What can I let go of? What doesn't belong to me? This doesn't belong to me. Okay, you don't have to carry this anymore. Automatically, we can eliminate the things you don't have to carry anymore. But But getting people outside of, so when Giudizzi talks about the gift after the pain or imagining life after healing, it's really about how do we, how do we allow? Because it's about allowing. How do we allow ourselves to live? How do we allow ourselves to begin to see ourselves as the glorious, amazing beings that we are? Bruised and battered as we might be, we're still these glorious, amazing creatures who live through and somehow come out on top and moving forward, even through this pain, in spite of pain. And so just being able to acknowledge that.
I think that as humans and a lot of the souls that I hold space for, it's the hardest journey and the tallest mountain is the one going inside. And you don't think
Absolutely.
that it's going to be, 'cause you're like, it's me, it's my subconscious, like I just protect myself. And it's like, oh, you better brace yourself for climbing that mountain inside. And then when you get to that point, and I think the release of your old self, not all of it, but I think that releasing of all those things that you thought, I think that's one of the hardest things about the healing process is understanding that part of you that you are not what you thought for so long. You're so amazing, you're divine, you're all these really, really beautiful things. Like there's just not even a word for it. Like you're just so much, and we're taught to be so small. And so when we have to release that thought of like, no, this is what I was. I was married, or this happened, or this happened, or I wasn't supposed to be seen. Like you let go of those things and you're like, there's freedom. And again, it's scary, the freedom. So it's a lot easier to
Yes.
stay like, no, I'm good, I'll just stay back here.
Right. Well, because triggers, when we're used to trauma, we're stuck in, right? Fight, flight, freeze, or fawn mode. The fawn mode, for those who don't know, is the shrinking part. We adapt to try to make ourselves acceptable to others. That's the fawn mode. But when we, most more people than not are stuck in freeze mode. They don't realize it, right? But they're frozen there. They're frozen at the point that the trauma began to occur, the traumatic events. When you start to step into something new, the same unfamiliarity that existed during the traumatic events, right? Whether it's abuse, whether it's neglect, because neglect is a kind of abuse, instability in general. Well, something healthy also
Feels
feels
no.
unstable. There's no carpet, right? So a woman who, for instance, might be accustomed to being hit when she said a certain thing, when she's out of that, she'll say something. Hey, listen, you want anything for to eat? No, I'm fine, I'm fine. No, it's okay. I'm offering. But the need to pull back and say, if I say what I want, it's going to cause me pain. I'm going to suffer because that's what I know. Even
Or think
though this person,
something's really secretly wrong. Like it's always like
yeah.
something.
But usually waiting for something that you believe is lurking around the corner, right? And so that, and as a, not only as a person who dates, and but also as a friend, and as I witness all the time, right? My mother, quite frankly, was 77 years old to this day. I'm 6 feet tall. My mother is 4'11". If I'm around my mother and I happen to move a certain way just too quickly, my mother shirks, right? Because that trauma is living in her body. So I think that we have a responsibility as people who are holding space to be able to constantly pay deep attention, the practice of deep looking in Buddhism, the practice of deep listening. where we're able to really get to the heart of the suffering of the person who we're holding space for,
Yes.
not to try to heal them or to fix them, but to simply be able to effectively hold space, we have to look deeper. We have to do a better job, you
I
know,
agree. I
because
agree.
so many people, professionals in particular, like to talk. They like to hear themselves talk. Professionals also have unhealed wounds.
Yeah.
And so sometimes their motives, sometimes they're projecting onto their patients, their clients. And sometimes they're supposed to be giving therapy to the client, and they're really using the client for their own therapeutic purpose.
I've seen that
But when
before.
we really make a decision and a commitment to listen deeply, look deeply, feel deeply,
Yeah.
then we're able to really become more effective in our healing practice.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do, at least my perspective on it. Like I was talking with some friends from the group, and I was like, I always say I'm a vessel for the universe. So there's not anything I really won't say that I can't do because I'm just a vessel for the universe. But I think that my
Right.
gift is that of holding space and showing people a different way to look at things. It's not me going in. Even though we're called healers, we're not the ones that go in and physically do. It's us holding space and showing people that they are capable of so much more.
That's it. I
Yeah.
love that.
Yeah.
Well, you're a
So,
pretty miraculous being, Miss Kitty.
oh, well, thank you. I enjoy you myself.
Thank you.
So what do you
Thank
have
you.
coming up? Do you have any new stuff coming up?
Well, I spent most of September and a part of October on the road. So performances are slow right now. Performances for me won't really pick up again until February.
Okay.
And then a lot of those things will be one-off dates, pretty much on the East Coast of the United States, presenting the healing suite in different capacities. But I'm getting ready right away to start launching into creating the next project. And so
Exciting.
I'm always sketching, I'm always composing. So I have about five projects that I could record right now if I wanted to. But oddly enough, the universe has got me in this space of minimalism and simplistic expression. And so I'm a bass player, for those who don't know. I play bass and I'm a vocalist. But for some reason, I've been creating all these solo piano pieces. And out of these solo piano pieces, I am preparing to create a new project, which I have to say is inspired by Deepak Chopra, because Deepak Chopra has an amazing audiobook out. If anybody's ever interested, it's called Secrets of Love, and it was he calls them sutras on love. My friend and colleague Farah Boulay, a rapper, spoken word artist, healer, she recommended it to me, and I listen to it every day. It's an hour and a half long, so I just put it on and absorb it. But then it inspired me to think about how could I create something specifically for couples. So I'm taking these piano meditations and I'll record some guided meditations over some of them
I love guided
to
meditation.
allow exercises for couples to develop deeper levels of intimacy, deeper levels of safety. And, you know, I have one piece, for instance, that's called Stay. And it's really meant for couples to begin to learn how to stay grounded when the urge to run from the difficult conversations or the difficult moments that make or break couples arise. And so I'll create a workbook to go along with those meditations and hopefully work on getting out on the speaking circuit and delivering some of these in workshop form in 2025.
I'm
That's
excited
the new
about that.
focus.
Yeah, you have to jump back on. That will be great. There's not very much out there
I'd
like
love
that, so
I'd
you
love to.
holla.
And anytime you want to collaborate, let me know because I like your vibe. So anytime you
Thank
want to
you.
collaborate on something, you let me know.
Yeah, I would love that. I would love that. That's I really love guided meditations. If I offer, say, a meditation, I'll do guided meditations to help others because, again, I'm a lyric kind of person. Words paint those pictures for me. So I get excited when I hear people talking about that. Yeah,
Great.
well, I appreciate it. And where can they find you? Where is your music at and all that good stuff? Where can they get in touch with you?
Sure. So for me, there's a couple of ways. Sorry, I just blinded everybody, but starting to get dark on the East Coast. So you can certainly look for my music on any of the streaming platforms that you use, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, iTunes. I always ask people that if they can, please buy the work because that means something different for an independent artist.
Does
Spotify gives us 0.04 cents
I
per
know.
stream. So, but if that's the only thing you can afford to do is stream, then I would rather that you get the music in your system.
Yeah.
So you can do that. Or you can go to my website, HashimaMoja.com, and you can click on the link and it will take you to a Songwhip link, which will give you all of the purchasing or streaming things.
Perfect. Perfect. I am excited. Yeah, we'll definitely touch base and keep in contact. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Authentic Life with KL, where we explore the powerful intersection of healing and music. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give a follow and share with your friends. You can find more information about The Authentic Life with KL and Kitty Lynn at kittylynn.com, kittylynne.com. Thanks so much for listening.